Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. This week, TJ and Sam are joined once again by PGC director and now professional pickleballer Kyle Kazuda to talk player development. With examples and applications in basketball and pickleball, they discuss strategies coaches can take back to their teams. Before we start, a quick word from Mono Watsa.
Coach, would you like to have a team full of great shooters next season? We've partnered with our friends at NOAA to bring to you the Hoops app, a free app to help your players measure the trajectory and arc of their shot. They'll get immediate feedback after every make or miss so that they can course correct and become a better shooter faster. Have your players download the Hoops app at thehoopsapp.com/PGC today so that you can have a team full of better shooters next season.
Hey, welcome to the Hardwood Hustle. We got a fun episode today, and it really ties into something we've got going here in PGC Coaching. For those of you that are members, and if you're not, feel free to join us, but we are going to be talking about player development. How do we better develop players? And this is one of those things where I think if you're not evolving, you're falling behind, because what we've learned over the years and what we did 30 years ago to train players or 20 years ago to train players, we're learning there's way better ways to do that. And so we've got a really interesting angle we're going to take today with a really good friend of ours, Kyle Kazuda, who was a college basketball player, a successful college basketball player. Well, that might be a stretch, but he was a pretty decent college basketball player, Kyle. And then he has worked with us at PGC for a long time and directing athletes and their player development. And then a while back, he decided to go pro in pickleball, and he was going to go all in on it after not even ever really playing. He said, a year from now, I want to try and be a pro. And he's accomplished that. He's become a pro, and he's learned a lot having to go to the other side of it, not just being the teacher, but being the learner. And so now he's both. He's been the learner. He's also the teacher, and all the things that he's learned from that, how he ties those in to how we can develop better basketball players. But Kyle, it is great to have you on, my friend.
Oh, TJ, that was awesome. I mean, are you reading off a teleprompter right now?
I am not.
Great. That was a great opening.
Well, appreciate that. And Kyle's a good friend of ours. We don't get to catch up, you know, all of the time where our schedules, everybody's busy going. But when we do, it's so fun. And Sam and Kyle and I, we had a chance to go to Orlando not too long ago, about a little less than a year ago. And we got to play pickleball and hang out, talk hoops and watch the Final Four. And Kyle, let me ask you this. All right. First of all, What is you actually talked to us about, hey, I think I'm learning so many things and I think this really can help basketball coaches. And so let's just start from the very beginning. Give us a little bit of background on how this came about.
Yeah, well, actually, it's interesting. TJ, for everyone listening, TJ was the one that got me into pickleball, kind of directly and indirectly. In fact, Sam, you were in the car, too. Before I go into that question, we were all doing, there was a coaching clinic going on in Phoenix, where I live. And we were all like, hey, let's go play pickleball. TJ's like, I've been playing. It's so fun. We've always, historically, us three have talked trash about tennis until TJ started playing pickleball. So we switched over. And I remember we were in the car going to Dick's Sporting Goods. We pulled into Dick's Sporting Goods and there was no pickleball paddle. So we're like, oh, crap. Like, what do we do now? So we looked up another Dick's Sporting Goods and there was not one close. And the courts were, it was like we were kind of tired. So we ended up not going to play pickleball that day. But then about 2 weeks later, I ended up going to the courts for the first time. Literally, yeah, I had this date written down, and the date has some significance, but August 15th, 2021 is the first time I ever played pickleball. And I actually know that because I went on a date with a girl to the pickleball courts the first day. So I looked back at that date, and then...
Was that your first date ever?
Ever, yeah. And okay. So the last one as well. So that was unfortunate. But so I started going to the courts, and the very next day, I had so much fun the very next day. I showed up again by myself because I was like, I just want to play again. I had this itch, which is kind of what pickleball does to people. So be careful if you're ever going to play, because it could change your life. All of a sudden you're going to quit coaching like 6 weeks later and go all in on pickleball and try to become a pro. But I went and played the next day. And then I kept playing and kept playing. About 3 months later three or four months later, on December 15th, I decided I've been playing so much. I've been playing with better players. I've been improving fast, which is one of the reasons pickleball spreads and is so addicting. And people use that word addicting with pickleball. On December 15th, I decided that I was going to become a pro pickleball player. I was going to give myself 12 months from that date to become a pro pickleball player. So I started training. You know, what does that mean? I didn't just go and play in the correlation to basketball coaches. And I think there's a real similarity here that I stopped just playing rec games, which is like going to the park, playing with randoms. You know, you play, you don't know who you're going to play with. You're not really working on any skills. And I started actually training. So I probably started dedicating about 25 to 35% of my time to going out and in pickleball, I call it drilling. It's like doing drills, working on skills. And so I started doing that. And then, you know, fast forward, I think roughly 12 to 14 months later, I'd fully consider myself a pro pickleball player, you know, competing against the best players in the world. And a couple ranking systems have me in the top 100 pickleball players right now. So that's where it all started and kind of formed. And the addiction grew so much that I'm full time in it now. One of the hardest decisions of my life was actually stepping away from my full time job with PGC and going all in on pickleball and training. And so that's how I got to this place right now. And TJ, I can't remember what your original question was because obviously I talk fast and a lot.
Yeah. Well, what I took from that is that your love life's not very successful, but we'll move forward. You know, Kyle, when I first heard about pickleball, honestly, it had a lot to do within the basketball world. Like I remember the Baylor coach and Gonzaga coach set up a pickleball room in the hotel. And then I remember during COVID, all the officials were playing and then the Dallas Mavericks and they started going. And so, you know, for those of you that haven't played, I think if you're a competitive person, there's a lot of the basketball world that has enjoyed playing pickleball. One of the reasons I think, Kyle, is the strategy involved with it. Like there's so many layers and levels to strategy, but I want to tie that into to player development because this has been my experience. I don't know if this is the typical experience, but you know, it doesn't matter if you have all the strategy in the world, if you can't execute on certain shots, right? And then vice versa, if you can execute all the shots, but you don't have the strategy, then you're also in trouble. And I think that relates directly to coaching because I see coaches that are really good at developing players, but gosh, man, their strategy just doesn't put players in the right spots and vice versa. They might have all the best offensive things, whatever, but they don't have the players capable of doing it. And I think coaches fall into this all of the time. So let's start on the player development part. Let's start on like, all right, what do we do and what have you learned that correlates to basketball on the best ways to actually be a learner and a teacher that can apply to us being better learners and teachers? Because I think this is huge for basketball coaches. I think that we waste a ton of time just putting people in drills because somebody else did that drill. But it doesn't actually carry over. It doesn't actually correlate. It doesn't actually make us better on both ends, whether it's the systems and strategies part of it or whether it's the player development. So start tying those two together for us.
Well, the learner and teacher thing to me, I think a very literal way to become a better learner is to take on a new skill. Like I took pickleball and I never played before. I had to learn it. Part of the reason it grows so fast is you can see progress early. But I think any new skill, I think it's really valuable whether the new skill takes you 5 minutes a day or an hour a day or a couple of days a week for coaches to actually try to take on something new. It doesn't have to be pickleball. It could be they're trying to become a better writer. They want to learn the Rubik's Cube, you know, whatever it is. But to put yourself in a position that you suck again, that's the truth. Like I sucked when I first started. And most people do. I was okay, but like, you're not good. And that's a humbling experience to not be good at something after you've gone through, you know, like a successful, whatever, maybe a basketball career, maybe you own a business and now you're coaching kids and you can't realize why they aren't getting the thing that you keep telling them over and over, like, just do it. Right. I'm telling you, go off 2 feet, embrace contact and finish. Right. But there's no empathy because an adult hasn't experienced something new in 3 years. So they're like, I don't get these kids. Well, you get it really quickly when you're the one that can't get it. And then all of a sudden you have this empathy for the player. So I think that's number one. Here's number two. So yesterday I went to our friend Tyler Cawson and another buddy of mine, JT. They've picked up pickleball in the last few months and they were playing a tournament yesterday, their first tournament. And so I went and watched and they've spent a good amount of time playing with me. So their positioning and strategy is actually much farther ahead than their technique right now, because we've talked strategy and technique, whereas it's usually flipped. When people start learning pickleball for the first time, the only thing they focus on is technique. And I think, you know, from a coaching standpoint, as I've taught a lot of people pickleball now, so I kind of put it into a three-part framework. It's still developing, but here's what I have right now. If I'm going to teach somebody pickleball for the first time, I'm going to teach them position, like where do you stand on the court in what situation? which will inform the second one, which is shot selection. Because if you're standing in this location, you're probably going to hit one of these one, two, or three shots. So position is first, shot selection is second. And then the third one is, okay, so you've been in the right position, you're hitting the right shot, but your technique isn't that great. Let's fix your technique. And so technique is the third: position, shot selection, and technique. So, you know, what I saw yesterday with my friend Tyler and JT is their position and their shot selection, a majority of the time, 70% of the time, was correct. But a lot of times their technique is still off, which is, to me, a really good problem to have with them, because they're doing the right thing. We just got to work on the form. And they know I got to hit this shot at this moment, but they can't quite do it yet, which I think would rather have than, you know, teaching them, we call it a dink in pickleball. A dink is like when you hit the ball softly over the net. Like most teachers just have people dink, just, it's a funny word, but dink to start. But then all of a sudden they go and play in their pickup games and they don't get to that because it doesn't happen in beginner play. And so they freak out because I've just been practicing dinks, but I don't know what my position should be or the shot selection I should take. So I think that, and then I'll throw it back to you guys, but I think that has a lot of application back to basketball, especially when, you know, I've done a lot of PGC sessions and I've learned from you guys a lot and all the incredible teachers at PGC that one of the big focuses at a PGC camp is that we're teaching reads. And then we're going to add the technique to the read versus like, this is the technique you have to have. But if they don't know the when, the where, the why, then sometimes the how can just be lost because it's just irrelevant to the moment. It's not going to know when to do that move. So Sam, can you sum that up for me?
Well, what I just thought about as you said that, Kyle, and we can talk on it, is like, to do that, I'm thinking from a basketball standpoint, okay, you got to play the long game, meaning if I'm working with a younger basketball player, I've got to be okay with them taking a perimeter shot or playing a, you know, defense where they might fail, quote, I'm doing air quotes, where they fail, but I know the technique will catch up. So I may have a player guarding a really quick point guard, you know, 25 feet from the hoop, and they get beat a lot, but we're teaching them how to guard 25 feet, or they're shooting that corner three and they're in seventh grade and they just haven't been alive on this earth long enough to get up the number of reps to be a good corner 3-point shooter. I don't know if that's a correlation. That's what I think of when I'm hearing you talk about the progression of position, shot selection, and technique.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. I mean, watching Tyler yesterday, I'm a very hard coach on our friend Tyler. I just yell at him. He prefers negative reinforcement, but you know, it's because I've been playing for a year and a half, and I mean, pretty aggressively studying the game. I mean, I'm obsessed with it, and I spend 7 hours a day probably either playing, like watching clips or film, or making content around the game. And so for me and for coaches who have been around the game for 30 plus years or 10 plus, whatever it is, all these things that we're seeing are so automatic to us. Like, I'm like, Tyler, that's like, I've told you, like, get up there to that kitchen line, so a line in pickleball that you want to be at to be more aggressive. And it's kind of like if you're standing 6 feet off the 3-point line, like, no, get to the 3-point line so you can actually take that shot, right? In pickleball, get to the kitchen line so you can actually be more aggressive to get a shot that you want to hit. And it's automatic for me, but I got to keep reminding myself it's not automatic for him. But when he does do it right, like, I got to celebrate the fact that he was in the right position, even though he popped the ball up and they smashed it in his face. He is disappointed in the outcome. I was really excited about the decision he made to get into the right position and hit, you know, the right shots. Again, to Sam, what we talked about, the technique was just way off. So, and you guys talk about it all the time, I'm sure, on the podcast, but celebrate the thing you want repeated. I want Tyler to get back into that position again, even if he misses the shot. And I got to tell him afterwards, it's okay that you missed like six of those shots. You've only been playing for 3 months. You're in the right spot. 90% of people are not in the right spot, right? And they're hitting a different shot. And then they're critiquing the fact that their technique was wrong. It was actually a technique on a different shot where they should never have been standing in the first place. So it's like this loop in their head that's incorrect. So I could tell Tyler, no, you're in the right spot. Keep doing that. We will work on that shot next time we practice.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, connecting the dots. I mean, I think there's a lot that goes into everything that you just said. I got a couple. The first one is the thing that stands out to me oftentimes, like when you're a coach and you're trying to develop players, you mentioned this, that my dad said to me a long time ago, this is going to be one of the hardest things for you as a coach. One is your passion for the game. Not everybody's going to have the same passion. And two, your understanding for the game. Not everybody's going to have that understanding. You're going to have to be able to relate to them and help them to understand. So you're, I see that all of the time. I see frustration on coaches' end of looking at a player and be like, why do they not get this? I experienced that yesterday in my daughter's game. Like, she is a really skilled player. I was watching the gym and she was the best shooter out of 40 teams of all different ages. Like, her shot's just really pretty. But she is having trouble connecting how to get available all the time, like get into the right position. And to me, I'm like, why are you running to the elbow? Like, why are you like, and I can't understand why she's going some of the places she's going, when I know that if she would just do this, she would get her shot. And then after the game, she's like, I feel like I've worked so hard on my shot and I don't get many of them in the game and did it. And I'm thinking, oh gosh. But I honestly am really trying to figure out how to connect those dots to her, because it makes a lot of sense to me. But how do you get inside the learner's head? You know, how do you get to that place of helping them? Is it just repeating and celebrating when they do it right over and over again? What are some other techniques besides just celebration of doing it correctly that you feel like can help the learner?
Film. I mean, yeah. Like last night, it just happened that I also went to Tyler's house last night after the tournament, and I do a lot of pickleball content. So I actually filmed a number of their matches and I started going through to clip them up because I want to make a video out of it for the people in my audience. But then Tyler was sitting next to me and he was watching basketball. And I just started showing him what I was seeing and stuff that I had mentioned to him earlier in the day on our debrief. And it's like the number one way to improve. And I think we know it, but the thing I faced a lot is it takes time. You got to set up the tripod. You got to film it. All of a sudden you just filmed for 45 minutes and then you're going to work after, or you're doing something after, and you kind of forget to go back to the footage because it takes a lot of time. But I don't know if there's any better teacher than, or any better way to learn than having a coach and then watching film on yourself. Because when I showed Tyler a couple of the things, it just clicked immediately for him. I'm like, I told him, dude, your weight is so backward at this moment that that's the reason you're missing this shot. And he goes, yeah, I got it. And then there was a perfect clip of it that I pulled up. We went slow motion on it, sat with it for like 5 minutes. And you could just like, and you guys know Tyler, he's super smart. He's a coach. So to see him suck at a sport is awesome, right? Because he doesn't suck at a lot of things. But then he sees it and he immediately learns. And so, and I think, you know, for your daughter, you know, it's hard. I don't know if there's film. I think celebrate what you want repeated works. But the moment you can see it and then just point out like, hey, you see how there's a huge gap of space here in the corner and you're standing on the elbow. And then because you're standing on the elbow, your defender is standing next to you. And all of a sudden there's four people within a 5 foot radius, like go over to the corner and outside the 3-point line, look how open you'll be. Or do you think you'll be open? Yeah, I'll be wide open. Okay, perfect. Next time we do that, I'm going to highlight that or whatever, right? Now she's seen it. She has the image in her head, which, I mean, last thing I'll say is I just watched some film of me playing horrible. I played in Utah 2 weekends ago. It's an up and down journey. I'm playing the best players in the world. Like first round, I'm playing some top players and I was horrendous. I watched some of the match back. I actually had to turn it off. I was embarrassed with myself, but like that's learning because I was not in a stance ready to play. I was being lackadaisical. My technique was super flawed. It was just like lazy. And I noticed, and I kind of felt it, but then when I saw it, I was so embarrassed. I'm like, I got to change this immediately. So to sum it up, film, TJ, I think that's a big way if you have the capability, which we all have phones. So however you can organize that, Sam.
Yeah. Another thing I'm thinking about, Kyle, so you've gone all in on this thing, you know, which is fascinating to me. Like it takes a lot of courage and audacity, I think, to leave a career and go all in a little bit cold turkey. Here's my question. In everything you've learned over the last year and a half, as you've gone all in, if you were to take those learnings and rewind the clock 15 years to when you were training, you know, as a high school player, basketball player, excuse me, you know, you went on and played Division I and Division II basketball. Like, mm-hmm. what would you tell TJ's daughter or my sons as a young student of a game? It could be basketball, but it didn't have to be limited to that. What are those learnings you've had? You're like, yeah, I would definitely do this different.
Okay, I got two. I'd ask way more questions as the people who are better than me and my coaches. I would be like an annoying, a very big annoyance. When I started all the pickleball stuff, I sought out the pros because the pros and amateurs play tournaments at the same venue. So it's like you're playing an AAU game and like right down the hall is like LeBron James playing. That's kind of how pickleball is set up. So you could just walk over to LeBron after the game and be like, hey, like, how do you pass so well? You know? So I did that a lot early, and I use social media as a way to like, I interviewed a lot of players. And I did that early on. And so I asked a ton of questions about certain things. And I was like, hey, how do you train? What do you do in this situation? Just kind of one-off questions at multiple tournaments. So if I were to go back, I would ask way more questions to people because you just don't know. Like, you can watch all you want on YouTube. You just don't know. Like, you don't, like Tyler and JT, they just don't know. So they're evaluating themselves on knowledge they don't really have yet. And so that's one. The second one is, I've been somewhat maniacal about this. And I still haven't really figured it out, but the intentional training, just what do I do when I go out on the court? You know, like what am I working on today? I mean, when I grew up playing basketball, I did the exact same thing. I just shot corner threes, wing threes, top of the key threes, wing threes, corner threes. I did a couple of one dribble pull-ups and I was like, that's my workout for the day. It's not wrong. Like, it's better than nothing. But the thing I'm always thinking about is, and we've talked about it a lot at PGC, like what happens most in games? And I did the same thing in pickleball. What happens most in these games? And I'm going to drill the heck out of that. And in pickleball, there's like three or four things that if you don't master, you just can't win at the highest level. And so like TJ, like speed ups, for example, there's a thing called speed ups in pickleball. You're close to the net. Maybe everyone's hitting it slow. And all of a sudden you decide to speed the ball up faster and try to win the point. Okay. So if you can't visualize that, it's okay. But the point is like, there's another thing called drops. If you can't hit a third shot drop, which would be like the comparison would be like, if you can't shoot, dribble, and pass, if you can't shoot well, if you can't handle the ball through pressure, if you can't pass to a person cutting to the rim, like ignore combo moves for your entire life. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter, right? Ignore like all these different fadeaways. It just doesn't matter. And so what I've learned that a lot over time is I just go to a tournament. I learn a ton. I'm like, shoot, I haven't mastered the three or four basic fundamentals. And I've been spending way too much of my time working on the nuanced things that happen one to three times in games that are valuable and can help you generate offense in pickleball. But none of those things even came up because I couldn't do the fundamentals first. So in summary, that's a good question, Sam. I just smarter questions and a lot of them to people who are better than me, and intentional training. And also one final thing, I've just been experimenting and doing like way more narrow focused training where I'm choosing one to two skills and I'm going at it for like 90 minutes in a training session. So I know I'm leaving like working on these two things versus, you know, tournament play. I'm like refining. I might do seven or eight things just to hit on everything. But like, I'm in like a mode right now. I'm not playing a tournament for a month. I'm kind of building my plan. I'm going to go one to two things every day and just level those things up.
Well, I know TJ is going to ask something. I want to say something real quick on what you said, which like you shot a lot of, you said corner, wing, top of the key threes. And I would actually say that might be the equivalent to the third shot drop in pickleball, meaning that happens a lot. And so a lot of kids don't shoot enough catch and shoot threes, and they do spend time on the four dribble combo move that'll happen once every eight games. So yeah, I mean, we talked about it before in your newsletter. You gave me a shout out on Master the Boring, so I appreciate that. But I do think that is so true that you got to master those fundamentals like you're talking about.
Yeah.
I would ask Kyle this. This is specifically tying to like coaches training players. Time is a big thing. You know, like you're going all in. You've committed your life to doing that. So your time is more. One of the biggest, you know, difficult spots coaches get into is time. What do I do with that time? So a second ago, you alluded to like, gosh, I need to lock into one or two skills. And there's this pressure, I think, in basketball. When I go into a training session for 30 or 40 minutes, and because we don't even always have 90 minutes. So let's just say it's a 45 minute training session. There is this thought of, I need to get ball handling, passing, shooting, jump stops, reads. Like there's just a lot to get in. If you had, I'm going to put you on the spot specific, kind of nail you down on this. If you had 45 minutes three times a week to work on your pickleball game, right? So let's just, that's more maybe my life, right? I got 45 minutes three times a week to work on my pickleball game, but specifically a basketball player, they've got that amount of time. Are you cross training? Are you doing something different every day? Are you chunking and going into like just one skill for 6 weeks, then move on to the next? Because I think this is the one coaches have a hard time making a decision on. Well, if I work on this and they're not working on that, if I do this, they're not working on that. And so a lot of times what I see happen is they go into a workout and work on everything. And 6 months from now, they're really not that much better at anything. They're kind of a little bit better at everything, but not really solid at one thing. So that is, in a nutshell, that is a dilemma that I think coaches get into all of the time. Based on your learnings, what is your recommendation on how to handle that time and making sure that it's being utilized to actually improve a player?
Well, I think before I would try to establish what are the three things, I would establish a principle and like an operating method for my, and this is kind of what I'm doing right now, but I think for coaches, I mean, one, like what's the principle? I would think really hard about my team, who I have as players. And then I would think, if we're going to choose one skill for this session or one primary skill, maybe say 80% of the time, what's the one skill that has the biggest domino on a lot of other skills? So, you know, if you're doing zigzag ball handling for 30 minutes, that's probably not going to knock any other dominoes over and move, you know, multiple things could happen. But if I'm saying I only have 45 minutes, I'm probably going to play a lot of games. I might have a narrow focus. Like today, our main focus is reads, and that's what we're going to coach. So we're going to play a lot of 2-on-2 games that reads is the focus. So coaches, we're just going to be celebrating the reads today. We're not going to be like, if they miss shots, I'm not even putting attention there. So it's probably a lot about where you're going to put your attention, but I'm not going to go super specific in basketball drills because I'm a pickleball player now. But here's what I would do. My principle would be, you know, what's the domino that will have the effect? And then my behaviors for all three of these would actually drive the three things. My behavior would be jog everywhere all the time. And like for pickleball, you know, you're playing, you might have a bucket of balls. You waste so much time in pickleball. Like I train with a lot of different people, and I know who I like training with because I know who has more of a sense of urgency. So some people want to like sit around and want to pick up the balls for 20 minutes and talk for 15. I just want to like jog, get the balls, pick them up, get back and go. Right. And I think that's one. If everyone jogs everywhere, you're going to maximize more time. So that then the behavior is jog. So I think the three things for me, I'm picking the three things that happen most in pickleball. It's called a drop, transition game, and dinking. Like if I could master those three things and I only had 3 days a week, 45 minutes, I'm probably going to alternate and see what I find have the biggest outcome. Like I might do 45 minutes of drops one day, 45 minutes of transition one day, and 45 minutes of dinking, or I might do two of each just to give some variety.
Flip it over to the player side here. Okay. So you've gone through, you know, in college basketball, you put a ton of work into your shot, you know, thousands of shots over and over again. And now you've gone to pickleball, you've had to learn another sport. Now you're more mature. Well, that's relative, but you're more experienced, right? You've been through more, you've taught a lot. Going back on your own basketball career, mm-hmm. right? What have you learned from your training in pickleball that might have changed the way you approached the way you trained in basketball?
Well, one thing is I would have filmed my practices more. I would have done like a 10-minute segment, set a camera up and actually filmed to learn, not just film for highlights. Like I would have gone and watched myself train more just to get a visual and then ask somebody, hey, tell me what you're thinking about what you see here. Did I trust? That's one. But the other thing is it's just the narrow focus. I would be thinking a lot about what is happening the most in games for me. So like in college, at one point I actually was doing this a lot. If it was like a cross screen, down screen, I'm screening a big block to block, and then I'm going to sprint up for an elevator screen through the top and catch. I would rep the heck out of that because that's a way different shot than a catch and shoot from a gun to the top of the key. Right. And so that's probably one of the, especially in season, I would just be repping the crap out of what I'm going to be seeing in games. So I feel so much more confident versus kind of, and the final thing I say, as I would just walk in with a piece of paper that actually had something written down on it that I was going to be doing that day. Like I do that in pickleball all the time and it helps. It just helps a big portion of the time. So more structured training would probably be the number one thing.
Kyle, what do you think, as you've studied and been around some of the best pickleball players in the world, and or the best, I should say, I'm assuming, let's just say, top 10 players in the world. I think of this like golf a lot of times, and I've heard like Tiger or Phil Mickelson talk about this. What is, when talent slash skill is comparable, let's just say, I'm assuming top 10, 20 players, what's the separator from the for the elite at that level? What makes number one better than number 11 consistently?
Yeah. Well, the number one player right now, his name is Ben Johns. He wins every tournament. Like, and he actually wins dang near every event at every tournament, singles, mixed doubles, guy and girl, and men's doubles. It's unbelievable how good he is. His, I'd say his athleticism and his skill is not vastly different than like 2 through 8. So to your point, this is a perfect example. He, one, has mastered fundamentals. He doesn't miss the basics that I mentioned, the drops, the transition, the dinking. In basketball, like he never turns the ball over, like almost never. And when he does, he like is so mad at himself because it's such a rarity. Right? And he's been playing longer than most players, but I mean, there's a lot of other players that have been playing the same period who aren't as good. Here's a second one. His shot selection. No average fan would ever notice this, but as I've studied the game a lot more, his shot selection is just almost never wrong. So what I mean by that, when he's off balance, he hits the right shot so he can get back on balance to hit a more aggressive shot later. What else do I mean by that? When does he get aggressive on the court is much different than when other people get aggressive. He chooses his spots a lot better. And then, so like, you know, if that's the second one, the third one is he's just consistent. Like I kind of said that, but he's so consistent. And I played against him in a tournament about a month ago, and he just doesn't miss any easy balls. Like he doesn't give you points. You have to win points. And a lot of other matches I play, a lot of teams will just give you points left and right, less at the pro level. But for him, like, again, like to wrap it back around, his athleticism and skill isn't that crazy. But I actually think that it's the fundamentals and the shot selection. Like the fundamentals and the shot selection for him just win so, so much. He understands the game. I mean, we talk about PGC all the time, like become the smartest player on the floor. And that's what I'm trying to build myself towards. So I watch a ton of him. It's the nuanced stuff that nobody ever sees. And half the stuff never, it doesn't make highlights. Like he has a lot of highlights, but it's that ball when he's off balance, TJ, like being pulled out wide. And all of a sudden he doesn't do anything crazy. He just like puts it back in the middle and rebalances himself for the next ball. Like that is such a high level shot, in my opinion, that never gets talked about ever. But you watch amateurs play like I did yesterday, and every time they get that off balance shot, they're doing something crazy because they panic. And in the moment of panic, they speed up. In a moment of panic, they pop it up. In a moment of panic, they just do something they've never practiced. He's just like, nope, I've practiced this shot, back on balance. Let me hit the smart shot. Let me hit the smart shot. Let me hit the smart shot to the tune of, I mean, everyone references him as the GOAT because he never loses almost. But I would say that's probably it, TJ.
Well, Sam. You know, the thing that's so interesting about that, I mean, the answer to basketball might be the same as pickleball, right? Like, I mean, like how many times we talk about this with shot selection, we teach it our PGC course and we've done it a whole bunch of times, but you know, 1, 3, 5, 7, and a 9. And what's the most common shot you see when you walk into a gym? It's a 5, yeah. Right? And when you go watch pickleball tournament, like if I got that ball going out wide and I'm off balance, I'm definitely shooting a 3 or a 5 at best. Yeah, and he's hitting sure. A set, you know what I mean? Like, and that's what our teams, we talk to our teams about just hitting singles, just, you know, just make the simple, smart play. We talk at PGC sessions about staying away from the ESPN highlight play and just making the right one over and over again. And occasionally that one will come. And the best in the world in pickleball is probably what most of the best in the world in basketball are doing. And especially at the lower levels, the teams that win consistently constantly work on their fundamentals, whether the stuff peak or a playoff 2 or whatever. They have great shot selection. They're constantly improving, and you see that happen in the same thing in the pickleball world.
One addition to that. So, okay, TJ, Tyson McGuffin was in town a couple of days ago. For those who don't know Tyson, he's been around forever. He's a top 10 guy, really, really good player. And he was in town. I got to play some pickup with him. And I played him in a tournament in Daytona. Actually, your brother TJ was there watching this match. And I played him really well. We lost like 11-8, 11-3, but it was competitive. They were really good points. I felt like we competed well. But I walked off the court. I was like, I'm not that impressed by Tyson, you know, and people say that a lot, like, oh, I'm not that impressed by this player and that player. But so often it's so wrong because things they did on the court didn't, quote, impress them, because to use basketball language, they didn't shoot the fadeaway and make it. They didn't have a crazy combo move. They just did the right thing over and over. And so I played with him again, and my buddy said something similar. He's like, yeah, Tyson, just like, his hands are just okay. They're not that fast. He, you know, he dinks it well, but not great. And I'm like, I was like, I play with him again. I'm like, hold up. Actually, he's unbelievably good because he plays a little bit like the Spurs. Like, you feel like maybe you could, like, there is a little bit boring to watch, people would say. I don't think they're boring to watch at all, right? But people say it's boring to watch from the outside perspective, but they win over and over. Like, Tyson just won the tournament last weekend, and he just does the right thing over and over. He doesn't miss the fundamental shots. And you leave the court feeling like, I could play with him. But at the same time, he's going to beat you 9, 10, 11 out of 11 times because he's going to hit the right shot 95% of the time. And that is just like such a separating, for me, it was a breakthrough because my friends were like, he's not that impressive. I'm like, no, you're missing the point. He's so impressive. He is so impressive. The fans don't always, I mean, I think he's impressive in certain ways, but the fans won't always say that the Spurs are amazing. The fans won't always say that Kawhi Leonard is like some because Kawhi Leonard isn't the most flashy player in the world. He plays off two. He bullies people. He shoots threes. He does impressive things, but they're simple. They're basic. They're consistent. They happen over and over and over. And it's so hard, you know, like the highlight culture in basketball, it's the worst because like it's the coolest looking thing. But even new pickleball players, they're working on the highlight shots, which is, you know, not to go into the detail, but it's like a speed up, TJ, right? They're working on a highlight shot. It's like off balance and it works one or two or three times, right, in a match, which tells them in their head, okay, this is a good shot. It actually ends up leading to five or six mistakes down the road. And pickleball doesn't have a bunch of stats right now. So they don't know that they just had a crazy highlight that actually led to going 1 for 7 in the same circumstance, which is a horrible percentage, right? Tyson's going to hit the same shot 6 out of 6 times. Just like you shoot that fadeaway and you make it, it's like it gives you the right to shoot 4 more fadeaways. It's like, no, like you got lucky. Shoot the unbalanced shot.
Yeah, and that's one of the hardest things for coaches to coach, I think. You know, Sam says it all the time, master the boring. And sometimes that just reset pickleball shot or that shot fake or the pass fake, whatever, it's boring. It's not. And I think it's getting harder and harder for coaches to sell that message. You know, I wonder if it's the same in pickleball. I think it's just getting harder to sell the message of these are the things that win, because these are not the things, going back to what you said earlier, that are getting celebrated. What's getting celebrated is that shot, going back to shot selection, that was a 3 or 5 that went in. And that's what's getting celebrated. Therefore, players saying, well, if that's getting celebrated, I want to get celebrated. I want to do this. And I think it's just a tough road to navigate on selling that consistency to players. People say, what's the biggest difference in average and champions? To me, it's just consistency, you know, and can players become consistent in those little habits? Like Sam says, master the boring. Or, you know, if Kyle wants to be great at pickleball and he wants a chance against Ben Johns, can you be as boring as he is? You know, like that's a really hard thing for young people to understand.
Well, what do you think about this for coaches? Because pickleball doesn't quite have it yet. It's trying to, but, you know, basketball has so many statistics. And at PGC camps in the past, people have come up to me and showed me we've seen it online, Twitter, 2-foot stats, right? When this team goes off 2 for an extended period, 10 games, like they make 70% of shots when they go off 1, they make 23%. That's like a drastic change. Or I remember a tweet that went out a while ago. When the ball changes sides, when the ball moves from left to right and then from right to left, when it changes sides twice, the percentage that they're going to score goes up by like, you know, 35%. I don't know what the stat is, right? But all of a sudden, that is such a dramatic stat that shows your team that ball movement is key and that playing off 2 is a better way to play a majority of the time. So do you think for coaches, I mean, what's a tactic they could use? You could celebrate what you want repeated. You could show up, put up the film and say, like, this is what we want. This is so good. They go home, they're on Instagram, they see like crazy shots, and then you're kind of fighting that battle. But how much of an impact does the stats have? What do y'all think?
Yeah.
Like to show those.
I think that you're hitting on something that I think is really important for coaches to know and understand. Like, I think we have to fight harder for player development and connection to what wins than we've ever had to fight, because you're fighting against so many things. So I think if you rewind 30 years ago and you say, don't shoot this shot because I said so, do this because I said so, it worked way better. I think the sell today oftentimes is, let me show you the stats or analytics. Let me show you the film on this. Let me, like, I feel like we have to validate and prove more than we've ever had to prove. And so it's interesting to hear, like, when you said, all right, well, we need to film it. All right, we need to rep out what shots happen the most. Like, I think we have to be a good player development coach this day and time, I think you have to look at it from a lot of different angles. And I think with PGC sessions, we do a really good job of that. Like, we'll talk about it, we'll teach it, we'll watch it on video, we'll see pros doing it well and not doing it well. And I think trying to hit all of those learning angles is really, really important, because I do think this generation does need a little bit more proof to make sure that they're to believe that this is what I need to do.
What about, Sam, what do you think about this idea to build off that, TJ? What about you're in practice, whether it's off season or maybe it's in season, and you, everyone kind of, I think, has the ability, whether they're doing it or not, I think, whatever, that they could film their practices in some way. Figure out the logistics of this, but you film your practice. You say, maybe it's the scrimmage portion, or maybe it's just like, maybe it's a game. You give a 15 minute segment to one player. You have 10, 15 players on your team. Everyone's going to get a homework assignment over the course of 10, 15 weeks. And their presentation has to be 15 minutes or less. And this could be really valuable 15 minutes of practice time here. Sam is player one, TJ is player two. Sam, you're week one, TJ, you're week two. Sam, you're going to go watch this thing, and you can give them some principles to operate by, some of a framework to think through. You're going to break the film down. This is your homework assignment, right? And so maybe they're looking for two or three things. They have to come back, present it to the team, and maybe even do stats on it. Like, it could be like a 2 or 3 hour project, and right? And I don't, whatever it is, they come back with the stats. How many times you go off two and do we score? How many times did the ball move? Whatever the stats are you want to do. How many high fives do we have? Come back and teach us. So every single player would have to do that. And there's like a peer pressure, like after the first, you pick your best player to do it first, your best communicator or whoever you think is going to have the, you know, set the tone. And then all of a sudden you have 12 weeks of film breakdown that, one, you've empowered leadership, and two, each player has had to do a breakdown and tell everybody else something that is working. So coach isn't preaching it, but a player is preaching it. I mean, I've never thought of that, but feels like it could be a decent way to put more work on them and have them buy in a different way. What do you got, Sam? What do you think?
I love the idea. We had a college coach on, you know, a few months ago, who actually, a little bit of a different thing, but he would have each player present the scouting report. So every game there was a new pregame speaker and scouting report. They didn't do the scouting report, Kyle, but they would talk about it after the assistant had, but they gave the pregame speech. So over the course of 30 games, you had a different player giving a pregame speech, just because this coach is like, you know, they've heard me all week. There's, what am I going to say in a pregame speech is going to change the trajectory? But he was empowering his players. So anytime, at a high level, anytime you can enroll your players into the process, I think it's money, you know, so that's a good idea.
Yeah, it made me think of, I think what you're talking about here, Kyle, Tim Elmore, you know, I know he talked about this a while back. I remember hearing this a few years, but I think you're right on. The epic learner, they're experiential, like they want to, right? And then the P, participatory. They don't just want to hear us tell them over and over what to do. They want to, and I think what you're giving is a great example of participating in the learning. And I think that's really important for coaches to hear, because that is really countercultural to basketball. You know what I mean? Like, where I just tell and you do. Like, that's the way it's always been taught. And so knowing that people learn different, and as you're going through this, like, you're working and you're coaching other people in pickleball, right? You were taking coaching. Now you're coaching other people. You're on both ends of it. Mm-hmm. And I think what's been really good for you is you had to go back into the classroom, and you're going to be a better teacher for that, right? I mean, you had to go back in the classroom. A lot of coaches don't have to go back into the classroom. And so they forget what it's like to be the learner. What have you benefited from being the learner again?
I think it just activates a different part of your brain. I mean, it has to, I'm not a brainologist, which I think is the correct term, but,
it's your whole dating life, but go ahead.
I mean, my brain just, what's the question? The learner. Yeah. I mean, it's what I said earlier too, TJ, like go try to pick up a skill, just like a few minutes a day it just activate that part of your life. Like, how's it benefited? I mean, one, I got to keep asking questions. I got to go through the frustration of not being able to do it. It builds empathy. almost more than anything. I just get it. Like I'm going to teach a PGC camp this summer. I'm doing one. I'm going to get it more. I'm still going to get frustrated at times, but I'm going to be able to tap into, like, I know what it feels like to suck. I also know what it feels like to feel like you got it this week. And then like a few days later, you're going to suck and you're not going to be able to feel it. And just know that's okay. That's part of it. Because like there's a, whatever the quote is, it's, you know, don't practice till you get it right. Practice till you can't get it wrong. Like I'm in that stage right now. And so and I'm in that stage for the past year. I've been like getting it. You move up a level in pickleball to the next level up, like JV to varsity, if you will. Then I have to go back to like, oh shoot, the basics still matter. And then I'm like, all right, I got the basics down at this level. Basics still matter. Right. So I think that's one thing that'll help coaches with what's benefited me from being in the learner in the classroom again.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of things that we've learned at PGC, would you say, I just hearing you talk, I think they've played out true in your learning. Like I'll never forget the graph I saw Dina draw for the first time, what it looks like to really grow and to get better. You know, it's up and then it plateaus. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you go backwards and then you go up and then you plateau, then you go backwards. Like that is frustrating for the learner, right? But it's been kind of played out in your experience and your growth and becoming a pro pickleballer.
100%. Yeah. I actually think about that growth, that graph, growth and graph a ton. I mean, it's my experience. Two weekends ago, I had my best pro tournament ever. I went 4-2, it's a double elimination, got the farthest I've ever gotten, and almost went 5-2. It was like, we lost 15-13 in the game that knocked us out. The 1 week later, I drove to Utah. I went 0-2 in mixed doubles, and I went 1-2 in men's doubles. And I woke up on Sunday morning, the day after, you know, the second event, going 0-2, just so disappointed in myself. A week after waking up and feeling like I was on top of the world because I had my best result. And I wrote about it in my newsletter. And there's this is James Clear quote that I've kept around my computer and looked at a bunch. It talks about mastery. And this way it says, mastery requires both impatience and patience. The impatience to have a bias towards action, to not waste time, and to work with a sense of urgency each day. And the patience to delay gratification, to wait for your actions to accumulate, and to trust the process. And those are nice words. And this is maybe the number one thing from all my learnings at PGC. They're nice. Like, we say a lot of good words, and I know the words. I know every quote. I've said all the quotes. But the moment you have to go do it yourself, again, back to being the learner, holy cow, it's so hard. You know, like, so hard to train with intention. It's hard to be positive after a loss and find the learning. It's hard to sit down and watch film. It's hard to be coached and be told what you need to happen because it's, you know, it's not the easiest thing to hear or see. And that patience is probably the number one thing I've learned going through this journey. Cause I'm trying to become the best pickleball player in the world. Like, I've written that down. That's my goal. And to become the top, I've seen the top. I've played against the best player in the world. Holy cow, do I have a long way to go, you know? But I want to get there. So.
Well, Kyle, so one of the things I think coaches make a really big mistake is only learning from basketball people. You know, I think that there's so much to be learned out there. Like if you want to be a better leader, there's a lot of people to learn from in football, pickleball, business. There's so many different ways to learn. If you want to become a better teacher, right? Like honestly, sometimes I think if you just look at basketball coaches, you might be looking at not the best teachers in the world. There's a whole bunch of, they might be teaching music. They might be teaching school. They might be teaching. So, you know, Kyle, you do a great job of that, of really putting yourself in the learner's shoes. And you've been that athlete, you've been the coach, the teacher at basketball. Now you're doing it at pickleball. I'd love for people to follow you. Where can they follow you if they want to learn more about what you're learning? Maybe because they just want to try pickleball, right? Or maybe because they want to be a better teacher. Where can people follow you at? Because you already have a huge following. And also, where can they follow you to laugh a little bit? Because you also put some pretty good funny videos out.
That's TJ. You're a good setup guy. I tell you what. So I write a weekly newsletter. I've written it for like 70 weeks in a row. Actually, I took a week or two off at one point. But thatpickleballguy.com, spelled how it sounds, thatpickleballguy.com. And I send it out every Thursday. I give a helpful pickleball tip. I try to share an entertaining video, and I give an update on my journey playing pro pickleball, the ups, the downs, you know, all the stuff that's happening in my life on playing on this tour. And then if you actually want to play pickleball for the first time, go to my YouTube channel. I put a ton of YouTube content out. It's just youtube.com/ I think at that pickleball guy, or type in that pickleball guy to YouTube. A lot of educational stuff. And then I do like some educational, but I do a lot of try to be funny. I try really hard. So, you know, you can be honest with me on Instagram and TikTok, that pickleball guy. So it's the same across all platforms. But I'm just having a blast creating content around the sport and playing it. This is like the most fun I've had in a long time. Except for when I was at PGC, I love PGC.
Yes, exactly. There you go. Obviously, you can see my skill as a setup guy. If anybody lives in the Phoenix area, Kyle could really use a setup guy in his love life as well. He's not real capable on his own, so we would love to find somebody that could be a setup guy for him out there. If you're in Phoenix, you can hit him up there and let him know that that's the skill set that you have. But Kyle, really appreciate you being on the show.
Oh, thanks, TJ. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, he is Sam. I am TJ. We are the Hardwood Hustle.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and Instagram @Hardwood_Hustle to stay up to date on the latest episodes and share your thoughts with our coaching community. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.